Welcome to episode 14 of First Stage. My name is Aaron Durbin, S-L-Y-D on Twitter, S-L-Y underscore D on Instagram. Screw that guy, whoever got that. And I'm here with Caleb Davis, Cal Bandini on Instagram and Twitter.
That's right, Cal Bandini, C-A-L-B-A-N-D-I-N-I. It's a play off of Sal Bandini, which is like a wrestling deal from Out Cold. No, that's not what it is. Out Cold, what's that? Ready to Rumble.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the old man, he's like, Sal Bandini, you want to wrestle? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could just make that mine by putting a C instead of an S.
Nice. I feel like that would be like you'd have like a singlet or something.
Yeah, definitely like a singlet, like with just the one, like the, you know, Andre the Giant.
And we are here with our special guest, Hee Mike P on Instagram and Twitter. He is the host of the Back in the Day Day podcast. He's also an actor and a Dallas-based comedian. Please put your hands together, Mr. Michael Pasvar.
Oh, wow. What's up, guys?
What's up, man?
How are we today? I enjoy that introduction. Thank you so much.
Fresh off the headlining the local axe throwing show.
Guys, you know, when I first started doing comedy, I said, if I can ever make it to a place where they're throwing axes at the same time that I'm doing a set, then I'll freaking retire. Because that is the epitome of what I was trying to get done.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the most unique, I guess, combinations to have, you know, audience members access to axes while you're talking yeah. shit to their faces. Yeah. If that is what happens yeah, during well, the show or start heckling.
If I am normally doing a headlining spot, I usually will do some crowd work. And so the fact that they had they could get axes anytime they wanted, you know.
don't strike a nerve with the audience.
I don't know if I'm going to do that
yeah,
one.
Kind
We're
of,
just gonna
let me
shelf
change
that.
Up. You guys are all beautiful. Like, everyone is beautiful. You have made great life experiences. I love you all.
Well, we like to start this show with a with your own personal theme song, so let's get that going.
Hee Mike. Back. Hee Mike. Pasvar. First Stage. Pasvar. First Stage. Hee Mike. Back. Hee Mike. Pasvar. First Stage. Pasvar.
First Stage. Mike Pasvar is on First Stage. All right.
Oh, shit, dude.
I got this new sampler, and so that was just me rudimentally like messing around with it. And I'm like,
yeah, that beat was hot, dude. I was actually like, I don't think I've ever, my name has never sounded that cool. Like, I don't think like I've ever felt that cool before. That was tight, dude.
Nice work, Durbin. That's always one of my favorite parts is just watching our guests' faces, because yeah. it's like, hey, we've got a theme song for you. Oh, really? And then they play it, and they're like, oh, shit, like you made this.
Yeah, you actually yeah. made a theme song. That's yeah. what's up, dude.
Well, it's like to change it up. But this is First Stage, where we like to talk about, you know, jumping off the cliff for the first time. And we've got this ongoing series of my first ever podcast. And I did it like 2013, and it's terrible. And so, like, I've been cutting a minute out of it, and we've been listening to it. And there's some real bangers on this one. So this is Vintage Durbin number 6.
Vintage Durbin.
When did fucking Buffalo Wild Wings quit putting the number of wings on the damn menu? They changed up the damn menu, and it's like, do you want a snack size, small size? Just tell me how many fucking wings I'm getting. I mean, make the numbers work. Jesus. This is the most mathematical thing. It's like, how many am I going to get? How much do I want to pay for? And then now it's like this psychological bullshit and stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, you pussy. You want the snack size? Can I do a public service announcement and say that Rumplemints fuck people's lives over? This goes back to Kansas City story, which happened before, where I woke up and I my hand was all bloodied up, and we were all in separate, we were in the gas light district area or power and light district downtown, and then later on we find out that place had like a multiple gunshot like murder like the weekend before we were there. We didn't know. But anyway, at the time, we were just we were at this like disco light floor kind of like Billie Jean dancing like club, and so we were out there and stuff. And then there's just a point where I look up, everybody's gone, everyone has their respective crazy stories, and from what I remember on mine was, I don't know, I left the club area thing, was walking around, and then I guess I made it back to the hotel. I mean, because I just woke up. And then I go back to do this detective story on what's going on. And I look at my hand. It's all bloodied up. It's like, what the hell? And then I look at my phone, and there's one solitary picture of a guy laid out on top of his, like, SUV. It looks like he got punched in the face.
So, yeah. So that was me in Kansas City.
Nice. Did you knock the guy out?
Apparently. I mean, because I don't remember any of it. And it was just weird that that one photo was there, and I'm like, I had to take a trophy photo or something. I guess some guy, like I don't know what happened. But
snagging souls out in Kansas City, dude.
Yeah.
Kansas will do that to you, man. I won't mention any names. I'm not going to throw any of my friends under the bus, but they'll all know who I'm talking about. There was a weekend that I wasn't there, but my group of friends from college, they went to Lawrence to do something. I don't know what they were doing. It was over the summer. And one of our friends, they just lost for hours. Like for hours. They couldn't find him. When he came back, he had no shoes and no belt. They don't like that. Like, there are no shoes.
It's like
no
he got
belt.
Thrown into jail, yeah, or something.
No,
it's
cell
like...
phone. He lost his cell phone.
Oh, man.
His shoes. And, like, he used to always lose digital. He used to use, this is what he would lose always, his phone and his digital camera. Like, any time he would get a new phone, he'd lose it. And anytime he'd get a new digital camera, he'd lose it. Like, in college, he went through, like, probably 7 digital cameras.
Kansas, oh my God. Lose, wow.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Like, he's like,
I don't know what happened.
We
yeah,
don't know what happened.
Gone.
So he just started buying disposable cameras. That's what he had to buy.
I probably got like 10 digital cameras from over the years. It's just like, ooh, it's a 3.5 meg camera.
They're probably
now.
His.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, that might be his. You know?
That's right. Oh, man. I guess a crazy story like that for me is I went to Minneapolis for the national championship when Tech was in the national championship for basketball. And after one of the games, no, it was between one of the games, and it was just a night that we had off. Well, I get all fucked up and like hit this pin. I think it's just a regular like nicotine pin, but it's like the strongest fucking marijuana pin I've, you know, it's like, oh, you're fucked. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then I like try to walk it off. I don't know. Like, that's a terrible decision when you're in a city that you're not familiar with. Like, I'm like, I'm just going to go take a lap around this square city mile block, and I'll go right back into the bar and I'll be fine. Well, that didn't happen. My phone dies. I can't get a hold. I was like basically homeless in Minneapolis for like 5-6 hours. And like, I can't get my phone charged. People don't take cash there for there's no cabs anymore. So they're like, no, Uber only, dude. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I'll just give you cash. And then I'm like at a fucking Airbnb, and by like the wizard of my brain, I remembered how to like, because I drove there. I was like, I don't know the address, but I know how to get there. And the guy's like, all right. But that was like my third guy that was like, you know the address, fuck you. And I was like, oh my God.
And my phone is dead.
Yeah.
I'm not from here.
Like, yeah. Like, my phone was just gone. I like ended up like passing out. Like, I just woke up being passed out, and there was like homeless people hanging around. I was like, yo, man, what's up? I was like, I'm not homeless. And yeah. He was like, hey, man, welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit.
This is Charles. He's the welcome guy.
Right. Like, you know, I was like, how was I welcomed? Did we do H Shack? Did one of you guys come in my butt? Did I get a facial or something? What's happened while I was asleep? But
it's like, I made it back though. You gotta have those like crazy stories. Like,
and then we found my phone on the last day we were there. I did like find my iPhone, and it was like picked up. It was like at a jail, and then it was somewhere else. It was nuts.
So somebody stole it, got arrested, and then
right, and then it got. I guess they turned it into some city. It was like a downtown development city deal. It's like, no, it's where we get all the phones,
dude. My wife, a couple years ago, we were going on a trip, like a road trip, and she, I guess, put her phone down when she was, like, changing our kid's diaper or something and lost her phone, okay? And she tried to do the Find My iPhone thing. They turned off the phone so we couldn't find it, right? And then she put on the thing where, like, I guess you can put, like, a message on it. So if someone turns it on, it says, like, if you find this, please call this number. So she put my number on there, right? Like 6 weeks later, I get a random phone call, and they're like, I found this phone in Austin. And we weren't even in Austin.
Yeah.
And wow. Like, they had a, and she's like, and she's like, I don't know what this is. I was like, it's my wife's phone. Someone, she lost it or whatever. I was like, if I Venmo you some money, will you mail it? She's like, yeah, absolutely. She mailed us the phone back. Someone stole the case. Like, that's like, she said, wow. She says, I just found this phone on the ground. I think it was like a Target. It's like, I found this phone in Target. I turned it on, and it said to do that.
Target in Austin. Yeah. Like that's some, crazy.
Yeah, we weren't even... we were on our way to... I think she lost it in Waco. So, like, it made its way to Austin.
Wow.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. That happened in my wallet, like, a few weeks ago here. Like, what had to happen was I got out of my car, and it fell out of my pocket when I was walking into the apartment. And then I get a call from the Texas Tech police, and they're like, we have your wallet up here. And I'm like, what? And so it was weird. I mean, like, the cash was gone. There's only, like, $20 in there. But, like, all the credit cards were still there. I canceled everything anyway. But, like, it was the weirdest thing ever. I'm just like, so maybe I'll have, like, a identity theft in the future or whatever. Nice. But
there's a picture in your wallet of some guy knocked out on a car. Yeah.
And it's like, payback, buddy.
You did this to me in Kansas City 9 years ago, you son of a bitch.
I'm coming back for you. Well, this is we always like to get something early, and this is kind of a fun thing because you sent us a video of you as basically like a toddler doing your first performance ever. It looks like it was a video, so it looks like it was shot on like when it was like Sony Handycam or something.
Who knows? Probably my dad probably had one of those big old VCR thing. You know what I'm talking like? Yeah, the VCR fucking, had the full size
VHS tape
was actually in it already. Yeah.
The strongest. Yeah, that's like that's the thing that's like missing from like dads used to have like the strongest like shoulders and shit of just like holding
the
actual
one that had
cameras.
The backpack and like
that's nuts. Yeah. So how did like set this up? Like, okay, so like what were you just like a phenom when you were a kid? And like how did this come about? Like, was your dad like, he's just so fucking funny, we got to, did you have a passion to do it? Like, how does this happen?
All right, so I don't know like exactly like where all of it came from, but I remember, do you remember when the Ray Charles Pepsi commercial was really popular?
Yeah,
like, you got the right one, baby. Okay, so I used to just like one day, my parents tell the story. I kind of have a memory of it. I'm like 5 or 6 years old, and we had a piano, and I'm just in there just like doing that. You got the right one, baby, like on my own. So then
you
I
have
just
sunglasses on too.
Probably, I have no idea. So I would just start doing different things that I would see, like different impressions, and then talent show came around, and I'd done the talent show before, some like really terrible MC Hammer dance. Right, like kindergarten. So
I definitely did some MC Hammer dancing and like young talent show stuff.
For sure, man. I had a broken arm, had a cast on and everything. Just freaking killing it. But so this year I decided, I was like, I'm going to write something like with all my impressions that I'll, like, you know, different things that I'll do. So that's how it came about. So I just did the talent show, and it was kind of like a little stand-up set. So I'll use that video as like a promo sometimes when I'm doing
like, cool. I've been crushing it. So were you just always like a little ham or whatever, like growing up?
Kind of, you know, I would use humor as my way to, like get into things. Like, you know what I mean? Like if like, I was really shy. So I was really shy, but if you got to know me, I would be funny. And I realized that like people thought I was funny pretty early, and that's how like people wanted to be around me. Right. So like in school, like I was pretty quiet growing up in elementary school. And then like, I remember like maybe like third, fourth grade, I realized like the kids that would sit next to me, I can make them laugh with just about any like just like random stuff, right? And so that's when I like started really turning it on, because I was like, this gets me friends, this gets me
That's
all
cool.
Right, well, let's see here. We'll go ahead and start this up. What? How old do you think you were in this?
Like, I think that was third grade.
Third grade. So how old are you in third grade?
Nine. I have a 7 year old that's in first grade, so she'll be 7 for part of second grade. So,
okay.
So
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
nine.
Third grade.
Nine.
Yeah. Okay. 9 years old. All right. Here we go. Better response than happened last night.
You peek it, man.
Applause break.
Thank you.
There it is. Kind of like you
get like a fucking riot in there.
It was like a time capsule. Like, and it's like you're hitting Ross Perot, you're hitting the I Got the Right One Baby, the Urkel, you know, TGIF. Yeah.
That was the very last one. You're like, there's some physical comedy happening. I was mimicking the workout videos that my mom would watch. So like the aerobic stuff. Like, so I like put a balloon in my
Simmons and stuff.
No, like hers was some female or whatever. Okay. And so I was
in
spandex. So I put balloons in my shirt and I turned around. I had breast, right? So that's what it was. Like I pulled in. If my memory serves me right, like I had like this big box that I brought on stage, and it had like different things. Like there was like a keyboard that I had out there, and then like a guitar, and then different stuff. And I was like just constantly changing. Pieces to be the whatever person I was playing.
Yeah, like definitely like we got a guy in town that kind of does that. Like you saw him last night, Rafa. Like you thought he was a serial killer or something, or like contract killer because he was all in black and he had a black.
Did he
had
have
black
his,
gloves?
Did he have his gloves on?
He had the black gloves on. Yeah,
he just doesn't take those off. I'm like, you look like I know you, but if someone didn't know you, like you look like you're with like. The cartel and someone fucked up. Like,
yeah. I asked him, I said, are you a driver? Like, that's what I said. And he stood up. He goes, do I look like a fucking driver? And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I go, you actually kind of look like the driver from, like, I was like, you remember, like, the Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise movie? I don't remember what it was called. Like when they're going around killing people.
Collateral.
Yeah. I was like, that's what you are. You're driving around, you're killing someone. They hire you to kill and drive. Like, like I was like, that's what he looked like for sure. I definitely thought. He was killing me that night.
Dude, I bet you that's like the best, like listening to like all those parents just losing their minds. Like that's probably like the most refreshing thing that could happen at like a kid's talent deal where it's like,
oh yeah,
here's Misty and she's going to do Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And you're like, come out and you're like, fucking I'm Ross Perot.
Yeah, yes. I ain't singing this lame ass song like this girl, you know? It's like,
I got lip sync. Right? Like, you know, like, oh, they're so talented.
Yeah, I remember, I think when I was a kid, I did a talent show where I just danced to Footloose, and I, like, kicked off my Sunday shoes on stage and stuff. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I remember one year the talent show act that brought the house down was these two, like, very popular white kids did Womp, There It Is. Like, they, oh, like, yeah, you know, like they did it, but it wasn't like good. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't even think they actually rapped it. I think they lip synced it. And people like lost their minds. Like,
this is awesome.
Oh my God, so much talent is out of this elementary school. Where do we sign them?
Yeah. Who would have thought Whoomp There It Is make a big comeback this year? You
yeah,
know?
I know. My kids sing it all the time. They're like, what is that song? The Whoomp There It Is? And I'm like, oh, you want to listen
Chocolate
to it?
Chocolate Rocky Road is yeah. cookie dough. Yeah.
At first, I was like, the fuck is this? I'm like, it's actually pretty catchy.
I was like, this is catchy. Like, it's a pretty smart move there. So you were, so this is you in third grade and stuff. So from this point on, when did you like take stand-up comedy seriously or whatever? Because I assume that there was a gap after this this video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I crushed in sixth grade. Yeah, I don't know what you're
third
about.
Grade. Let me tell you all about how I peaked. First time I did actual stand-up was, I think I was 21. I did an open mic in Oklahoma, and then after that, I started kind of regularly going up, maybe like once every couple of weeks for a little while.
And this is Oklahoma because you were studying in Oklahoma.
Yeah, right? I went to OU. Mm-hmm. So went to OU, and then they had like a little open mic that was, I think it was Tuesday nights. Like that was on like our little campus corner area. That's where all the bars were at.
Like in Norman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we have like, okay, so you know, like, is the spot in Lubbock is the depot, right? For like college students?
Yeah. Like, yep.
Okay. So ours is Campus Corner. It's like right across the street from campus. And there's like 5-6 bars on it, a couple restaurants, little shops.
We've like got that. A little thing like that too. It's called Broadway or whatever.
Okay.
Like
yeah.
There's
yeah,
a
yeah.
lot of like stuff like there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was like a little Italian restaurant that was kind of off Campus Corner, but in Campus Corner too. And that they would do an open mic every Tuesday night. So I'd hit that up every now and then. And it was the best part, the stupidest part about that open mic, man, is there's this guy, his name's Al Ashbeck, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's very, very famous in Oklahoma, sports talk radio, and he's got a very distinct voice. He's like, he talks like this, he's like, okay, if the Sooners are going to do it this year, what do you guys think? Al Ashbeck, right? And he's like, and like everyone knows his voice in Oklahoma, right? And he would come to every open mic, but not for the open mic. Like he was... like friends with the owner, he had like his own special booth, and the booth was like right off of like where the set was doing. And he's talking the entire time. I was like, everyone knows your fucking voice, Al. Like, you know what I mean? Like, can you just shut
did
up?
Did you like? Did you like talk shit to him and stuff while you're on stage?
Or I
like,
never
like,
did.
I'm Al Ashman.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Like, let's break down the third quarter. What went wrong with the Sooners? You know, like it's just like, calm down, Al. Like, we'll listen to you tomorrow on the Sports Animal.
Right, yeah, he's just ruining y'all's sets and shit.
We like, had that with the place
this
here.
This Parmesan is not what I wanted.
I ordered the Alfredo. Jim.
Yeah. Like the owner would talk and heckle us at this one show we had in town, and we're just like, we're not doing this show anymore if you're just going to keep talking. It was at the Bash's show.
Yeah, that
was... just like, well, it was like, we're done with the show, because...
it was like, it was like, not a show, it was like for his own entertainment to come, like, talk shit and be like, well, let me tell you all these street jokes that I know. And you're like, Jesus Christ, dude, that's not what we're trying to do at all.
Yeah.
And you are not helping at all. He'd like be back there and he'd just be, you know, drinking whiskey out of, you know, whatever, like pouring him his own shots and just sitting there being like, hey, here's time to discourage people from being creative. Here we go. Like, fuck you, dude. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, that could be like a history of Lubbock comedy. It's like a lot of bad venues, a lot of changes and adaptations that we had to do.
Dude, I mean, I did a show in Dallas like 2 years ago, and the guy that was for whatever reason, they didn't want a comic to host it. They had this guy that was like a radio show. He doesn't know. He's got like an internet radio show and like whatever, and he's like a motivational radio show. And he's hosting it. So every, in between each comic, he's like, now I got this book for sale if you guys want this book.
Oh.
I got this. I was like, shit, my book just came out. No one cares about your book, right? Can we just bring up the next comic? And then before like the last comic he brought up, before he brought me up, he did a set. And he did, and I think it was Bernie Mac. I don't remember exactly who it was.
He's like, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
But it was someone else's. It was someone else's set.
Oh no!
And I was like, that's someone's set. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't remember who it was. Oh, I think it was Bernie Mac. And
God
I was like,
damn.
Cool. Can we get him off the stage? Can you just introduce us, please? Stop trying to sell your book. I'll buy 5 copies if you'll just bring me.
If you'll just, somebody goes up after him and it's just like, I don't got this book, but I got a pamphlet for sale. You know, it's a little bit shorter, so you might as well buy my shit. You know?
Yeah, there's a venue in Tyler, okay, in Tyler, Texas. I'll make fun of it. I don't care, right? It's a cool, it's an interesting spot. It's a comedy club. All right, it's called a comedy club, and it's half of it is a cell phone repair shop, and then the back is the comedy club. And it's actually kind of a cool spot because, like, you go downstairs and it's really, really small. It's like the size of like a bedroom almost.
Oh, nice.
Right? And it's just like everything's impact. And it's like we had like 15 people there and it felt like there was like 100 people there, right? So it's actually kind of a cool spot. But the guy that owns it, that owns the spot, is like this entrepreneur. He owns like that place. He owned a locksmith. He was a company. He owned something else. And then he was also running for mayor.
Oh, yeah. Mayor of Tyler, Texas.
So a five-tool player.
Yeah, and in between each comic, he would promote one of his businesses.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, right, he's like, and I'm also, I'm a rapper, so I'm about to bust this freestyle.
Please tell me it's a white guy.
And he's a Hispanic. And then he busted a freestyle. Wasn't terrible, wasn't good. And then he pulled me up, so then I came up and I just like made fun of him for the first like 5 minutes. Like I was like, I didn't know what else he was gonna try to sell us. I thought he was gonna come up like, anybody want to watch? Anybody yeah. need like a watch, right? Like I was like, this dude's running for mayor.
God damn.
He didn't
going
win.
For it.
He didn't win.
Those usually don't work out. Yeah. Anytime someone that's like, oh, what does this guy bring to the table? Well, he has 9 businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are
I'm
they?
A member of the community.
They have one address.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all, it's a Swiss Army knife business.
It's one cell phone number.
Yeah. For directory, press 1.
I won't say his name. I'll tell y'all after the podcast, but I think he's from Lubbock. I think he got a start in Lubbock, so y'all might know who he is.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah, so like, so you were in the Oklahoma doing open mics and stuff, and then you eventually, I guess, moved to Dallas.
Yeah,
you're pretty much performing in Dallas like as your home location. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm from Dallas. So after I graduated from OU, I moved back home, and then started in the summer when I would come home, I would do a couple open mics. But in all honesty, doing the open mics when I was in Oklahoma and I'd come home for the summer was very intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just like a whole different.
I got bumped on the hyenas one time.
Oh, bro. Just like... All you do is get bumped on your first. No, that's what happened to me. So, like, at our open mic in Norman, it was just when you signed up, that's what order you went.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how it works at comedy clubs,
no,
right?
No.
Their regulars don't sign up.
We don't know you.
Right.
Yeah, their regulars don't sign up. I mean, they kind of do, but like if they're a paid regular and they walk in, they're like, hey, man, what time you want to go up? And it's like, can I go up in like 20 minutes? I need to get out of here pretty early. And they'll put you up, right? So I got there when the doors opened at like 6:30. And I brought like 7 friends with me. And I on the list, I'm like, oh, it looks like I'm going to go up in like 5 or 6 people, right? Like, I'm going to get out of here early. I just kept going further and further down that list. My friends were like, oh, my God, dude, how long do we have to watch this? You know what I mean? And I went up like at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
I've made that mistake before at a place in Denver. It was like, I got there. I was like, I signed up. I was like, got there early. I was like, I'm going to get there and sign my name up. And we go eat dinner, come back. They'll start the show, and I'll just go, and we'll be done. That's not how it works.
Mm-mm. No, they're going to bump you and bump you. And now, like, you know, like those comics that were bumping me, I remember there was a couple of y'all ever heard of Paul Varghese?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I saw you had him on your podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't he like the best known Dallas comedian?
Yeah, I call him the godfather of Dallas comedy. He didn't like that.
Oh, yeah.
but he is. He's like.
Because, like when I think of a Dallas comic, I think of him.
Yeah.
Like,
so he. At this point, when I'm going, he'd already been on TV, I think, once, right? So I knew everyone talked about him, right? So I was like, this is Paul Varghese, right? I didn't understand how open mics worked. In Oklahoma, everyone's just doing their best shit every single time, right?
You know what I mean?
And he comes up there, and I'm like, this is Paul Varghese, dude.
He's like trying out.
And he's trying out, so I was like, this dude sucks. Like, I was like, I'm going to destroy him, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, like, you see him on a real show, and you're like, oh, my gosh. It's just a whole nother level. So, yeah, so doing comedy in Dallas at first was kind of intimidating when I would come home. But once I graduated, then I started doing stand-up pretty regularly in Dallas. And then my first job out of school, I got a door job at Dallas Hyenas.
Oh, okay.
And it hadn't opened yet. So I saw that they were hiring. I was like, man, I need some money. And I also want to get in at this comedy club.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go work on the door.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people go through the door
to
get better spots.
And it was the smartest thing I ever did, dude, because I worked the door and, like, the manager is also the person in charge of making the open mic list, I didn't have to do that whole wait till 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
right?
What's the guy's name that looks like an old rocker that like runs that, like he was running that open mic for a while?
Butch Lord.
Butch, yeah,
yeah, he's like, not here anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He was there when I got bumped that time.
So yeah.
He was still there.
Yeah. He's where does he live now? Arizona or something like that?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, so like I started working there, and then the owner would give me guest spots. So like Thursday night, he'd be like, "Hey man, you wanna do a guest spot?" And I'm like, "Yeah, cool, dude." You know, it's a guest spot went well. And then like on a Saturday, like a sold out show, randomly he'd be like, "Hey, you wanna do 5 minutes on this show?" And I'm like, "Yes, I do." And so those would go pretty decent, right?
Yeah.
And then it got to the point to where he would say, "Hey, if you come on Thursdays," because not every they didn't have the full staff on Thursday nights because those are like the free shows. It's the same show you see on the weekend. They just have no cover charge,
yeah.
And they're just not there's not as much of an audience. So the full staff wouldn't work. So he was like, "Hey, what about if we have you come up? I'll give you a guest spot, and I don't pay." Like, you know, like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I was like, yeah. "I'll take it."
Yeah,
right? So I finally started getting like guest spots pretty regularly. And then he stopped doing the whole "I don't pay you" thing. That only lasted a couple weeks, and then he went back to just giving me guest spots. Well, then one week, the opener got stuck in traffic on that Thursday and couldn't make it. And they were like, "You're opening." And so the owner happened to be there. He wasn't always there every night, right? Because they had three locations at that time. And so he saw me do my set, and he goes, "All right, dude, you're on my roster now." And I was like,
yeah.
"Sweet," right? Like, so it's just like, so that's how I got in with them, and then just kind of did it after that more and more and more.
Yeah, and you're still doing shows there and everything right now.
Yeah, not as much as I was. Honestly, because the weekends are really long commitments. You're doing five shows, and for me, like, to miss 3 days in a row is a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to, like be away from family for 3 nights in a row is a lot. So, like, I will do those weekend shows, but they're not as much as I was, you know, before I had kids and stuff. So
yeah. Well, I mean, you got to set your priorities and shit.
Yeah. So I'd much rather do like one-nighters. Like that's like, you know, like I'd much rather go somewhere I can do like a one-night show.
Yeah,
because
you have like a day job and stuff. So like you can like at your leisure do when you need to do, you want to do like a set or a weekend or whatever.
For sure.
That's nice.
Yeah. So that actually has made comedy a lot more fun because I did comedy from 2007 to 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the goal, right? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Do comedy. But then I quit. I didn't like say, "Oh, I'm quitting comedy." It just kind of happened. You know, like I had a lot going on in life and like I was trying to like build up this career and all this other type of stuff, right? Start a family. But when I came back in 2016 and I had a job that I was solidified in, like I had a career and I was set up and we were all fine. Then it made comedy a lot more because I didn't care as much. Like, you know, "Oh, you don't want to book me? Cool. All right. I don't need this to support my family."
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
the pressure's off.
Yeah. So it just became like a lot. I can just do the shows that I want to do.
Do the shows you want to do.
Yeah.
Again, that's good. I would love to get to the point and stuff. Like, but I mean, my goal still is to just do comedy, like, because I'm just like, my day job's just there. I mean, I don't really care for it that much. So, like, if there's ever a point, but like, I do like the fact that I do have a job so I can pick and choose the shows that I want to do, at least in town or whatever.
Dude,
so.
And that's, I tell like a lot of like, the people that I work with that they like want to do like passion stuff outside of our job. Like, they'll be like, "I just want to focus on this and everything like that." And then they'll start struggling at our work. And I'm like, "Guys, like, you're doing it the wrong way."
Yeah.
I was like, "You use this job to fund your passion." I was like, "I can go do a." I use this weekend as an example. I was like, "I'm going to Lubbock and Amarillo in a couple weeks." I was like, I'll end up making enough to where I have a little bit of cash left over after what the money I spend to come out there."
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "But since I have success in my day job, I can do that."
Yeah.
I was like, "But if you
take less money,
or you know what I mean? Like, if you screw around at work and you don't have the day job stability, you're never going to get this passion off the ground. Do both."
Yeah.
Just work 60 hours.
That's the problem. We have a bunch of guys who just want to be hustling and like charging people. And I'm like, "Well, it's got to be a good show if we're going to charge people money. And like, I would rather do a show for free and make it a better show and eventually ask for money than just like, it's like charging $20 out of the gates." I'm like, "I looked at that lineup. That's not a $20 lineup."
No,
you know? Like,
No. And that's really important. I did a show a couple of years ago at the House of Blues in Dallas. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of their like side rooms. Right. And they wanted to charge $50 for the show. And they were like, "You guys aren't promoting this, blah, 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 blah." And I said, "I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to ask anyone I know to spend $50 to see a bunch of local comics.
I was going to say, you got like Bill Burr headlining or
something? Yeah.
$50
Yeah, dude.
That's
when
like
you
a pro,
can.
It's like touring comedian
that's like
shit.
AAC type. Like you go to the American Airlines Center, see Kevin Hart. You know what I mean? Like that's. Oh, that's not even Addison Improv money.
I don't even think Brian Regan's coming here, and I think his tickets were $37.50. So at the Buddy Holly Hall or whatever. So.
It's really weird, man. Like how, so that's why I told him. I said, man, I was like, no one's gonna pay $50 to come to this show, and if they do, they're stupid. And like, I'm not trying to talk shit about myself, but I'm not worth $50, and no one on this lineup is worth $50, and us combined together is not worth $50.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's got to be like, I think that's like a problem that happens in anywhere USA with any sort of like comedy scene. It's like there's just not like a voice of reason on some of the things that happen. You're just like, look, you can have confidence all day and you can make people laugh, but at the end of the day, like, that is outrageous. Like, to do something like that, you're like, dude, this isn't, I mean, good for you if you do get, I mean, but it's just not gonna set a good precedent, because if it's, you're gonna go and they're like, that's a lame ass show, then you're done for forever.
Exactly.
I mean, it's done.
Because I'm not gonna quote the exact statistic on it, but there's like some crazy number, percentage of an audience member when they go to a comedy show, that's their first comedy show that they've ever been to. Like, it's a really high number of the percentage of the audience that their first show ever. So if you show them a terrible time, well, you just missed out on 20 people ever coming to a show again.
Right, And it's, I mean, I think that's something that, you know, Aaron and I and a few other folks that help with Laugh Hub City stuff, it's like, that's like our main fear and also like our main focus on stuff where it's like, you know, people can pop up and put stuff together and do whatever they want, and that's fucking America and shit, but it's like, when does that, like, cross over to, like, the, like, is this is, oh, that's the Lovett comedy scene. It's like, well, there are people here that do care and are trying to do some quality shit.
Yeah, you
but
don't
I mean,
want to burn, like,
is
a bunch of new people on a show that you're not affiliated with.
Yeah.
It's like, I hope you don't think that's what it is, you know?
Because, like, okay, so, like, I think, I haven't ever had the ability to, like, really build a room, like, build, like, my own, like, shows or stuff. I've tried a couple times. Usually what happens is like, the first time that we do a show at a new spot, tons of people come.
Yeah. Right? Always big the first, like.
Big. The second time's kind of okay, right? The venue is still happy with it. The third time, it's like, eh. And then the fourth time, they're like, we don't want to do this anymore, right? That's usually what happens. And, like, so I think the thing that's so important when you're trying to build that is just always have a solid lineup. You know what I mean? Because if you had a solid lineup that you could change up every single time, then you could just get the same 50 people coming, because every single time they come, they're seeing a brand new show. You know what I mean? I think that's the important thing to do.
I think it takes like 3 months to build a good room is what I've, like, from what I've seen from here and stuff. And it's just like, and it takes one bad show to lose that 3 months that you built up.
Yeah, it's like kind of like working out, right? You know, like you'll work out real hard for like 6 months straight and you're like finally seeing something, and then you take a week off and you're like, why am I out of shape in 1 week? What happened? You know, like I worked at, what happened?
Yeah. It just takes like, one bad show with like the wrong person at that show. You're like, don't go to that shit. And people actually listen to this person. And you're like, fuck.
It's like super polarizing.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, we're kind of already in this. We're just going to ask you some random questions stuff. I wanted to talk a little bit about, because you have an acting career as well. You were in an episode of Friday Night Lights, which I could not find on a streaming service to watch. I was going to watch that episode.
I'm not in it.
I could find you. Were you just in a football uniform? You can't even tell it to you.
No. It just, the scene was cut.
Oh, okay.
Anything that I have done for television has been cut.
Oh, fuck. Like,
really?
Yeah. So I wouldn't really call it an acting career. You know, it was maybe for a small moment, it was kind of a career. Definitely not anymore. But like, I did Friday Night Lights when I was in college. So I went to Austin, was there for a weekend and filmed something. And that when it came out, I was like, yeah, it is going to be cool, man. Tell people. And then it's not in there. And then I did another episode of this show called The Deep End, I think is what it's called. And I was Douchebag College Guy was the name of my character. And same thing. I thought that, you know, it was going to happen. And then the scene didn't happen. They didn't either. I didn't know what episode. It only made it like 3 episodes, and it was taken off air. So I don't know if the episode I was in didn't air yet, but I thought it was supposed to be in the premiere, and I didn't see, my scene wasn't in there. The whole sequence that we filmed was not in there.
Wow.
So
it just got cut. Everything like one of those like shows that doesn't even make it to a full series or whatever. Yeah. It's like, well, we'll try it out for two episodes. And
yeah. The only thing cool about it, Billy Zane was in it.
Oh, nice. Mm. That was probably bald Billy Zane at that point.
I think so. Yeah, he was bald.
Yeah. Post-Titanic. Oh,
Billy Zane. Now, this is my child.
Yeah. I love how like, he's just going to live on in that stupid meme, you know?
Yeah.
But like you inspired me though, because I watched your acting reel on your site or whatever, and it's like you're in some low budget things, and I'm like, I was in a low budget sketch, and so I like went on IMDb and I just totally gave myself my own IMDb credit.
Oh, nice! So, that's awesome. Oh yeah, I have a reel out there. I was like, what are you talking about?
I think it's deep on your YouTube. Or
yeah,
something.
Like, it's. And I know what's that's funny because like a couple of I did this right after college. I did this really bad horror film. Right. And it took like a long time to shoot. It was out there like for like a month every day, like 5 days a week going out and shooting this horror film. And my best friend always like, when are we going to see that movie, dog? Like, you know, like, and I was like, you know, you don't really want to see it. So finally, about like 6 months ago, I mailed it to him.
Oh,
I was like, I was like, let me text my dad and my mom and see if they can find it. It's in their house somewhere.
Oh, they so it's not DVD. Something we could find on Amazon Prime.
Probably like, not. In the deep section. So okay, so this is what they told us, and I think a lot of this type of stuff is lies, and they might have been telling us the truth or not. But it was apparently supposed to go to the Sci-Fi Channel, is what it was being like. They had purchased the script or something like that, right? But when it was done, I was like, there's no way this thing is going. Going on television, yeah, yeah. Right? So anyway, so that there's a, I know what you're talking about, that acting reel. So there's a scene from that, and then there's another thing.
It's like very dark. You can't really see anything that's going on.
There's a scene from that, and then there's a scene from this other film that I did called No Change, where I played this like Hispanic gangster, right? That was like this delinquent that was in charge, and it was like about like this guy would go around, he would like motivational speak, and it was called like Changing Your Life. It was like Change, and he would carry around change in his pocket. I'm like, you gotta get that change, right? So like I like meet the guy at the end after he gives me the motivational speech, and I'm like, hey man, I really liked what you were saying out there, bro. Like, speaking of change, you got any change that you were talking about that I can have for the bus or whatever? Like, you know,
yeah.
He gives me some change, and then he's like, hope you really mean what you're saying, and then he changes and he walks off, and I go, fuck change. Like, and that's like, so like, that's like,
what was the name of that character? Shithead Mexican? I mean,
Paco.
Paco. Yeah.
And when I auditioned for it, they had me come in for like that and like some strip club bouncer. And I was like, I really want to audition for the gangster, right? Like, I was like, I want to play the gangster or whatever. And they're like, okay, yeah, you can read for it if you want. We wanted you to do the bouncer thing, but yeah, you can read for that. And then I ended up getting that role. And like, at first, they had me, like, I'm really glad they didn't do it this way. At first, they had me doing like a, like,
like a really bad accent.
Yeah. Like, yeah, like, you know what I'm like? And like, like 11 years ago, that could have, like 12 years ago when we shot it, like this, it would have been fine. But like, if now that was out, like, canceled.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
we're not getting,
wait,
a
hold of this guy.
Yeah.
A real Mexican to play a Mexican? Cancel this guy.
Yeah, canceled. Right? You know, so I was like, so I'm glad they like let me use my real voice, you know? Like,
yeah. Oh, man. And then talk about, like, I mean, that would just add like 1,000 levels to that deal where it's like, fuck change. Like, that ruined my career. Yeah. Fucking insane.
Like the Obama like coming out the campaign, it's like change, and you're like, fuck change.
Yeah. Like, what does he really think? Like, you know, like, I was like, I don't. What?
Yeah. Oh man, I got a question here with, I mean, just hearing from, because I mean, you're on like, you're like a, into like the next level of like comedy than what we do here in Lubbock. Like, you know, you headline, you can kind of cherry pick what shows you want to do, and you go and you knock it out and you do a good job. With like, I just wanted to like ask you like how you thought of and how you navigated COVID, and like, was it just like a full on shutdown, or was it just like, you know, just a pause and then you just resumed whenever shit was cool? Like, 'cause I just feel like a lot of people or a lot of comedians, we just kind of, we didn't really fucking know what to do with ourselves. Like, it was just kind of like a weird like moment that,
yeah, I made
like
dumb
time.
YouTube videos. That's all I did.
Yeah, it's dude, like time you don't get back.
I did the one of the last shows at the Improv before the shutdown.
The Addison
so,
Improv.
Yeah. So Wednesday March 11th, I think, is when they said it was a pandemic.
Yeah.
And the next night, I was headlining the Improv. Right? And so I had been, like, promoting like crazy. And they gave me an unlimited guest list. So I was just like, anybody I could, I was like, bang, bang, yeah, right? And so that day, that Thursday, it was just one by one text message, cancel, 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 cancel. And I was like, God, this is going to suck, man. We still had a pretty good crowd. Like, there's 100 and something people there. But like, I think it was like, I counted up, it was like 50 something people canceled. Like, right, like, wow. Like took off the guest list. And that was on just on mine. I don't know what the other comics, who of their people canceled. So shut down, everything just stops. And then I didn't do a show. That was March 12th. I didn't do a show again until the end of September. And then, so I did a show end of September. And then I did another headlining spot at the Improv on a Sunday night, like, I want to say like the beginning of October. And then nothing again until January. So because I decided to do those shows in September because that's when the numbers went down.
Right.
And all the comedy clubs in Dallas were taking a lot of precautions.
We opened up for 2 weeks.
I think there's like a glimmer of hope there.
Yeah, there was like September, October. We did two outside shows at where we do our open mic and then shut back down.
Yeah. And so Dallas did like a lot. Like, okay, so like Addison, I think they were the first comedy club in the country to open, right? And so what they did is they gave all the comics their own mic. Everyone had to wear masks. They did a temperature check for everyone that walked through the door. Like, all the stuff. Like, they spaced it out the place. Have y'all ever been to the Addison Improv?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know how they have, like, they have, like, long tables, and they have the small tables, right, and all that type of stuff, and they just pack you in?
Yeah.
What they did is they got rid of all the big tables.
Just did a bunch of small tables.
Just a bunch of small tables.
Four or something. Yeah.
You could only sit with your party, right, and everything like that. And so they had it kind of set up to where it was pretty safe, and Hyenas was doing the same stuff. So, like, Hyenas got shut down. They couldn't do shows. The Improv could still do shows because the way that it was...
It was more of a restaurant, I guess.
It was labeled as a restaurant and as an entertainment place, not a bar. Hyenas is filed as a bar.
Yeah.
So the way that Hyenas got to open back up is they changed their menu. I think...
Added more food items.
Something like that, yeah. And so... but yeah, what did I do to kill time? I started a podcast. Right? Yeah. Started a podcast. I trained for the Dallas Marathon. All right. That was a lot of my time, which was freaking stupid, man. I don't ever
recommend. They had a Lubbock Marathon here, and I ran the half, and it had about killed me. So.
Yeah. I didn't end up doing the marathon because they canceled it. So I did all this training. I trained for like 28 weeks.
Damn.
And I ran four times a week. I ran like 600 and something miles. And I use the word ran very loosely because there was a lot of just walking and stuff like that. But I didn't miss any of the runs, right? Like I did them all and everything like that. And then they canceled the marathon. And then I thought about just like running around my neighborhood and just, you know, like, just doing it because like this is a freaking lot of work for nothing. And so my buddy had asked me to do that with him. He was like, hey, he hits me up. And this is like my best man in my wedding. Like we do a lot of stupid shit. And he hits me up. He's like, hey, man, you want to train for the Dallas Marathon? like around this time last year. I go, I guess I ain't doing anything else. Let's do it, man. So I was texting him one day, and I was like, hey, I'm going to vlog about it on Instagram to keep myself accountable. I'll make like stupid videos to go with it. I'm coming with hashtags so people can find it. So I came up with hashtag Juicy Jogger. And then that turned into this like Juicy Jogger Nation where – for whatever reason, him and I, who are not in shape, became these like fitness motivators.
like thicker guys running. Yeah. They're like, these guys are doing it. I can do it.
No, dude, it was crazy. It was insane. We had like 75, 80 people. They would tag us every time they would work out. Like not just running. Like if they'd go like lift or like they'd go right. And so we started this whole thing. And then he ends up breaking his ankle. Right, we could do this like fun run at White Rock Lake because we had to do like a 9 miles. So, like our friends came up to us and I think 10 people showed up and we all like ran the White Rock Lake, which is like a 9 mile track. And then he broke his ankle from doing that. And so then I was just left on my own. Right, I'm doing all this training by myself. So like we did this whole thing where we were like, Sonny's gonna be out for 6 weeks, and so donate miles to his broken ankle. So people would like tag us like I just donated 3 miles to the Juicy Jogger Nation. Like, we had this, like, little thing, like, where people were doing all this stuff, and then as soon as we stopped running, everybody else stopped running.
Like,
yeah.
He, like, felt bad. It's just like, I didn't realize I was carrying all these people with me.
I haven't heard anything from him. I guess I can just hang out now.
I guess I got no excuse anymore. I can just I can go off by myself.
Juicy Jogger Nation.
Juicy Jogger, man. Nice. It was fun. It was a fun
one. I wanted to talk about the podcast because, like, I've had fun watching. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen a couple of them, stuff like the Paul Varghese one stuff. It's like, first off, I want to say your production is really good. Like, you've got, like, because I watch it on the YouTube.
Okay.
And so I just thought, it was like, oh, this is nice. And then I think the last one you did, you were in, like, a brewery or
something.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so, like, what's that setup? Do you have, like, is it just, like, one main camera that's, like, an SLR? Do you have, like, a... Like,
okay.
What is...
All right. So, I am not the smart one at the for my podcast. I just talk. I have a... There's a guy named Travis Wright. He has a podcast called I'm a Fan Of. It's really, really cool. You should check it out. What he does is he brings on, like, local people that he's a fan of. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, musicians, comedians, and other stuff like that. And he interviews him. So he had interviewed me on his podcast a couple years ago. And so I was just bouncing ideas off of him for this podcast that I was coming up with. He's like, you know what, dude, I'm kind of looking into getting into producing a podcast. How about I produce your podcast?
Well,
and I was
nice.
Like, hell yeah, dude, you can produce your podcast. You do really quality stuff. So he produces all of it. So for the camera setup, mm-hmm. what we have is we have one that is doing like a wide shot of both of us.
Yeah.
And then there's a camera on each of us. So there's three cameras. And then... So that's that. He's using, I couldn't tell you, man. I think it's just like an SLR camera that he uses. And then and he does all that production part of it and just makes it look and sound really, really
good. Yeah,
because
it looks really good. And like it's like, yeah, he's like your young Jamie. And like I'm like I am the young Jamie for this. That's why there are no cameras. There's nothing going on. It's just like I had to figure all this shit out myself. And then I'm just like, it'll be audio until I can figure something else out. So
and then we went to the brewery, and we shot from there. We did the on location one because the guest that we had for that episode,
was it his brewery or whatever?
Yeah, he's a radio person, in Dallas. He's on the his name's Ben Rogers. He's on the Ben and Skin show. And so he said that he would do the show, and he lives really close to where that brewery is, and we record in Deep Ellum.
Yeah.
And where that brewery is like 55 minutes from Deep Ellum.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, there's no way he's going to come to Deep Ellum, so we'll come to him, right? And then we're like, well, we could record at your brewery. And he's like, yeah, let's do that. Let's do that roll down, right? And so we recorded there. So we're going to try to do a few more of like the on location stuff for the people that we feel like we need to go to.
Yeah.
You know, instead of having everyone come to us.
Yeah, because that was pretty cool because I was just watching that. I'm just like, just guys are going up there ordering beer in the background. Like, it was just like, it's pretty crazy, but like, it's fun. Like, you've had some really interesting guests on that podcast.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it not just comedians.
Yeah. That's the original thing for this. It just hadn't happened yet. I was gonna get some local musicians in here and stuff like that. But we just know a lot of comics, so we've just been doing comics right now. But we're gonna expand it out eventually. So
right, it'll happen.
Like I have like coming up in the next season. It comes out May 3rd. I have like some comics already recorded, and then a couple of musicians, and then I also have like a therapist that's gonna be on it, and then. I'm trying to think what else that's like unique. Three radio guys and I just trying to keep like a mixture of people, right?
Yeah.
Like that have interesting careers, interesting stuff that they've done. So it's just not like dudes coming on my podcast trying to do bits.
Like
I want it to be funny. But I think other people can be funny, too, that aren't trying to be funny.
Yeah.
It's right?
You don't want to turn into, like, those, like, radio show mornings where it's just, like, calling in. It's like, bah, bah, bah. And then you start doing, like, a joke or whatever, like, that you're set up to do.
That's kind of, like, the goal for it.
Hell yeah. You got anything else?
Yeah, I was going to see if you have, like, a solid, like, some sort of, like, go-to, like, road story that's just, you know, kind of a crazy thing. Just being a comedian doing something like that.
You want me to do two stories?
Let's go.
Okay. So I had been doing comedy for about 4 years at this point. Okay. And I'm working the comedy clubs in Dallas. I'm working the Hyenas clubs at this point. Right. And I'm an opener. And so I'm doing a festival out in East Texas. and I find this place that was called Joel's Comedy Club. All right, and it was like 15 minutes from where the festival was, and my parents have this like crappy timeshare that we would go to that was in that same town as Joel's Comedy Club, and we were gonna stay there for when I did the festival. So I like found the guy on Facebook, and I was like, "Hey man, I'm a comic. I'm gonna be there next week for this festival. Can I come and do a guest spot? So then maybe I can come and work your club later, right? You know what I mean? Just kind of two birds with one stone." And so he sends me a message back. He's like, "Yeah, absolutely, dude. Like, yeah, let's set that up. Send me a clip." And I was like, "Yeah, I'll send you a clip." And then he's like, "Hey, what's your number? I'm gonna call you." And I said, "Okay." He calls me back. He's like, "Hey, bro, can you headline that weekend?" And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Can you headline that weekend?" And I go, I guess if you want me to headline." He's like, "Yeah, I'll pay you X amount of dollars. And then you call me headline." I was like, "All right, I'll headline your comedy club. I don't know why you want me to headline your comedy club, but cool." So I come out there, and I'm driving, and I'm like, "Where is this place, right?" And I turn, and GPS takes me place, and I pull up. I'm at a storage facility. The comedy club is inside a storage facility.
Oh, fuck.
Wow. Right? And there's like this little sign. Yes, exactly what happens. He pulls up a door. I come into it. And it's a pretty large storage facility. There's like a makeshift stage. There's all these fans on because it's like
so fucking hot.
Yeah, there's no AC. Right? Yeah. And like nobody is there. There's no crowd. Right? And they finally show up. Two people show up. He's the opener, the owner. Mm-hmm. Okay. His wife does 7 minutes.
Oh, this is great.
Okay. His wife does 7 minutes. Then their son, who's like three, is there. And he's just running around the entire show with an Iron Man mask on. Just running, making noises. Okay. And then the feature act comes up. Okay. And during the feature act, this guy just busts through. And he goes, "Who drives the gray F-150?
Holy shit.
Who's driving? It's blocking my spot." And I'm like, "Oh, that's me." And so I have to like leave.
Oh shit.
All right. So someone calls and is like, "Yeah, we're coming for the comedy show. We're having a hard time finding the place." So these two people show up. And I don't know how much time. I was supposed to do 45 minutes. I don't know if I actually did 45 minutes or not, but I did however much time I did for two people. And it was just me having a conversation with these two people. Like, so what do you guys think about this joke? Let me retell it to you. You know,
whatever. Let me change this up.
Yeah, so that's one story. And then...
did you get paid for that?
Yeah. Oh, I felt really bad taking his money. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because, like, he handed me this money. Only two people came. And I'm like, this guy just made negative dollars.
Yeah.
You know, I felt really bad taking his money. And I'm pretty sure... he lived there.
Oh, fucking man.
I don't 100% know, but I'm pretty sure he might have lived there. Like, cause I think I saw a cot back there. Like, maybe he just goes there to take naps. I don't know. But it was a weird setup. But it's cool, man. And then another one is the weekend that I came and did that show with you guys at the library.
Yeah.
Okay. The next day, I went to Big Lake. I don't know if you've ever been to Big Lake before.
I've driven through Big Lake before. There's no lake, by the way.
Yeah. So, only thing I knew about Big Lake, Texas was, did you ever see the movie The Rookie with Dennis Quaid? That's where the town is that character that he plays.
It's like close to Ira Ann and stuff, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah. And so I show up to it. And it's this outdoor bar kind of setup. It's kind of like an amphitheater almost. Like it was like a bar with like a little, like I don't really know how to describe it. And they also had a laundromat there as well. Same thing. It was like a laundromat / bar. Didn't know the laundromat part until I got there. And it was in between two man camps. You guys know what man camps are, right? It's like where
oil workers
right.
live there when they're like traveling, right? Okay. And so it's just these rowdy people. Right. And there's no jokes happening. I can't even do a set. Like I'm watching the other people that went up before me. And I was like, they're trying to do material. And these guys don't give a shit about their material. They don't want to hear your hot take on airline food or whatever, whatever it is that you're going to do. And so they're just like the guys are just roasting the comics like while they're trying to do material. So I'm like, scrap your material, dude. Like you're not going to there's no material. You're going to have to do crowd work the entire time. So I get on stage. And as I'm watching, like, the feature act or one of the openers or whatever, this guy that was, like, this big burly man, he walks in with a gallon of milk. Like, show them with a gallon of milk. And not even like a full gallon of milk. Like, it was like halfway.
He's been hitting that milk up already.
You know, right? And so I did like 15 minutes about just him. Like, I was like, I need to know about this milk, man. I need to know, like, I need to know more information about your milk. Like, I was like, that's the most baller move I've ever seen in my life, to show up to a bar with a thing of milk.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, you're just taking your kids' milk? Like, you know what I mean? Like they're not getting milk tonight because dad brought it to the bar.
Yeah.
You know? And then during my set, this guy stands up, like 350-pound man, is like, I can do the splits. I didn't know we were taking suggestions, sir. And so he gets on the stage and does the splits. And he can do it, like, legitimately.
Jesus.
So, like, that was an event, like, that was pretty wild.
Yeah, and sounds like it.
We had a good but it was actually pretty fun, man. Like, I'll sell koozies. I sold so many koozies to those dudes. Like, they had a great time. And one of my friends rode out there with me, and he goes, I for sure thought we were going to get beat up. Like, I was like, I was like, nah, dude, they loved me, man. I don't know if they loved me, but they bought a lot of koozies, so
we're
not getting beat up.
It's always a good, It's a good
like that feeling of tension, and then it's like, no, dude, you did great.
Yeah.
Yes, thank God. Sold like 20 koozies. It's great. Well, cool. I think we're at an hour now, so I guess we'll go ahead and wrap things up. We like to close it with getting for the promo photo to get you to pick a vinyl from my collection, and we take a picture of it, and then we just talk about it. So you chose The Big Chill, which is a banger album. Like, it's got a bunch of hits on it and stuff. Why'd you choose that one?
I liked just the picture, and I thought Big Chill. I don't even know what Big Chill is.
Oh, it's like an old movie. Like,
yes.
I think it's like Kevin Klein and, like, I don't know, someone else. Like,
I didn't know that.
Oh, it's like an ensemble class. Yeah, because I got that. I want to say I got it at, like, one of the, you know, random record stores for like $1, $2 or something. And, like, but yeah, it's got like a bunch of old school hits on, like Grapevine. You know, like, I can't think, like, shit from. I can't remember, but yeah, like, are you into music at all, or like who are you rocking out to right now?
Man, honestly, I don't listen to much music that much anymore. The only time I listen to music is what my kids demand that I listen to.
Oh yeah,
and so right now it's a lot of kids bop. I don't know if you guys
know
what that is.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
It's very awkward.
Yeah, what's the kiddie version of WAP?
Like, they haven't came out to that one yet.
Oh,
but, you know,
they haven't sold out.
But you know which one they do have? Is they have that Bruno Mars is like, you got that condo in it, that's what I like. Sex by the fire at night. Like, they have a kids' bop version of that.
Oh,
and so, like, my kids sing that song because they know, and I'm sure, like, parents, like, their kids know that song, you know? So, yeah, kids' bop is kind of what I've been jamming a lot lately, and I listen to just a lot of talk radio. I'm very old, you know. I'm very old. But I have, if I have been listening to music lately, on my own, I've been really. I really like Ed Sheeran. It's really like, okay. All right, I'm going to sound real. Okay, all right, don't judge me. Okay, so I started off like making it a joke at work that I liked Ed Sheeran. And I like it was like a bit almost. I was like, I like Ed Sheeran, right? And then like one day, like I watched a YouTube video of him live. And I was like, this dude's incredible.
So the bit came full circle. Yeah. I'm actually an Ed Sheeran fan.
I was like, this dude's incredible. Because, like, I don't know if you guys know this about Ed. All right. But, okay, he doesn't have a band. It's just him. And he plays all of his own beats and stuff and does all his own backup vocals because he has a loop pedal. And so, like, when he's live, he sets all that up each song. So it's just like... Like when he has, like when he wants a beat for like a drum, he'll turn around his guitar and then he'll record that part, and then he'll sing the backup real quick and record that, and then so like while he's performing, he's like doing it all and like pushing buttons, and it's just him, like it's so like
yeah, like a Spivey,
for a local reference.
Yeah, so
that is cool. It's pretty like anybody that can do that shit, you're like, all right, this guy fucking knows like every instrument and how to play it. It's pretty impressive.
Very impressive.
And I like a lot of like 2000s hip hop. Just listening to stuff that I like to listen to when I was, you know, cool and exciting.
Banging it back in the day, like Chronic 2001, like
mm-hmm. You know, or like Which songs do I like? If song comes on that, like anything, like Little John, East Side Boys, or something like the other day, like Nuck If You Buck came on. I was like, oh, we about to do like, you know, I just drop my kids off. We Nucking If You Buck, right? You know,
just lock the car door. That's great.
Well, sweet, man. This has been a great episode. Do you have any shows coming up? This will probably drop next week. So if you have anything you want to promote before we get out of here.
Yeah. May 1st, I am at Rollertown Brewery in Salina, where I recorded that episode that you were talking about. We are doing the first ever comedy show there. So we're hoping that it'll be a big one. I'm going to be at the OKC Bricktown Comedy Club in June. I don't have the exact date, but I'll be there on a Sunday. I don't know the exact date off the top of my head. And then season 2 of my podcast comes out May 3rd. I hope you guys will check it out. It's called Back in the Day Day. We have a big Lubbock audience for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully we'll get some more downloads from there.
Excellent.
Hell yeah. Well, this has been an awesome episode. This was episode 14 with Michael Pasvar. You guys have a great day.
Hee hee. Back. First day. Pass bar. First day. Pass bar. First day. Pass bar. First day. Pass bar. First day.